This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 22A of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have photographer Tiny K and his wife and model, Kat. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and welcome to the Kinky Cast. Tonight's show is the photo show. Beast, how you doing sitting over there?
I'm doing much, much better, Woody. Sorry to miss a couple of shows, but I'm back.
Well, welcome back, sir.
Good to be back. Tonight, we have Lee with us.
Hello, everybody.
Who is going to be leading this cast tonight.
And with us tonight, we have a photographer here in the local area, and he goes by the name of Tiny K.
That's me.
We're glad to have you here, and we look forward to talking to you this hour and learning all your tricks of the trade, and hopefully you'll teach us a thing or two. And you have a guest with you tonight?
Oh, I do. I do. I have the lovely sweetie of mine. Her name is Kat. She's very soft-spoken until I make her mad, and then everybody can hear how much I messed up whenever she screams and yells at me.
That's very right.
Oh, isn't that cute?
Let's just get started. How long have you been interested in photography?
My interest in photography has been for nearly 20 plus years, probably more than that. I, as a teenager, explored it with the film world and then picked it back up again a little bit more seriously later on and did film until I progressed into digital photography.
How long have you been interested in the kinky photography that you do?
The kinky photography has been about 5 or 6 years. Before I really got into the kink style photography, I became well known in Nashville as a glamour photographer. And then I saw one of the Two Naughty Boys picture of a rope dress that got me interested, and I started looking at and doing that. And then I got introduced into FetLife, and then the world exploded.
Are you a participant in that world, or do you just photograph that world?
No, I was very much in denial, what a lot of people have told me before, while I was with a person that we'll refer to as
X,
the Big C. She is an X for a good reason, but once that realm left, well, then I did start opening up more into my personal life and with the kink style and the bondage lifestyle. And I always called it being ornery and just being mean and, you know, just picking on people. Mm-hmm. But I've really explored it a lot more. But definitely, I had a strong foothold in the BDSM world with the rope bondage photography and doing some kink photography for specific clients if they had asked for things. It was a very difficult world to get into because I knew nothing of it. So people would ask, would I do this or would I do this? And I would sit literally on FetLife just perving the pictures.
So then you made the transition from perving the pictures to making a lot more of the pictures.
I did. I started making a lot more of the pictures and was doing a lot more specific stuff for clientele.
Quit being so PC.
Quit being so PC.
You beat the fuck out of me and fuck the shit out of me is what you do.
Okay, so in the personal lifestyle, yes. Kat brought me in and she discovered, or she helped me discover that kinky part of me that has always been there, and she released the bear.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
One of the very first times we ever were together, she said, choke me. And I reached up and I put my hand around her throat.
Yeah.
And she gave me this disappointing look. It's like a politician who shakes your hand with a loose fish. And now she says, choke me. And then she's tapping out pretty quickly because I'm literally choking the hell out of her.
Well, you have a very small hand.
I know. Very small.
Yeah. How tall are you?
I'm 6'7".
Wow.
So you've earned the name Tiny K for a reason.
Absolutely. Little known fact, the name Tiny came from my grandfather who's passed, and I was a little, small infant, and he always used to call me as Tiny Bobkin.
Aw.
Then whenever I got much older and began to fill out and become size and stature, well, then it sort of came back around and it just stuck with me.
We'll be right back after this break.
Hi, this is Kate Kinsey, and I'm here with KinkyCast to tell you that I have a new series of books out called The Totally Uncensored Kinky Adventures of Chloe St. Clair, Sex Slave. And you can take a sneak peek at this on Amazon.com.
I certainly do enjoy your photography that you post. What about your models? Do you get them to sign a release? How do you handle that?
Well, Kat, what would you say? Because the reason I want to open this up for her in an aspect is we work together, and while I'm setting up the studio, getting ready for things, she's running the paperwork and doing a lot of the things with the models whenever they come into the house.
So, Miss Kat?
We have a simple model release that he used and he has used for years before we ever got together. It basically states that they won't edit the photos in any way without consent. They won't post them for profit if it wasn't deemed that type of shoot. They weren't coerced into doing this. We didn't hold a gun to anybody's head. You know, we didn't say strip naked or else. You know, that they are doing this of their own free will. And then it pretty much states that, yeah, my joke to all the models when they come in is, yeah, sign this form. And, oh, by the way, if you die, it's not our fault. because it just basically states that, you know, you're doing this of your own free will. And, you know, when he uses the suspension and things in the photography or, you know, even if a model gets too close to a light, you know, it can fall on her head. It's got a small liability clause in it. But pretty much I take care of all of the advertising for him. I run his FetLife. I run the models when they get in the house. And I show them examples of his work if they have not already seen what he's done, or if they have a specific shoot that they want to do. Like, one thing that I run into a lot, being a little bit of a hefty girl myself, is getting a bigger woman who can be my size or four times above, and she wants to feel comfortable and do this kind of shoot, and she's so self-conscious because of it. So he's worked with numerous women of all shapes and sizes, and it's really great to show a woman, hey, this person has 120-something pounds on you, and look what he did. But yeah, that's pretty much my part of it in a nutshell.
The definitely one thing I will state at the beginning here, Woody, just as an example, pretty much anything that I'm going to give out as examples with answers is going to be based off of my philosophy that I created called Ford Chevy Dodge. And that philosophy is, Woody, within 5 seconds, I want you to tell me, who makes the best car, Ford, Chevy, or Dodge?
Dodge.
Okay. You're going to get 5 different answers from 6 different people, because it's whatever fits you. Someone might say Porsche. Someone might say Ferrari. It's whatever fits you. So, a model release. Model release to me fits me because it's only as good as the paper it's worth. Mm-hmm. It's only as good as how much you pursue it and push it. Because if you see that they do something, are you going to push it legally? Are you going to really take the actions that you say you're going to take? Or is that just big words at the beginning?
Now, do you actually copyright your images? Do you send them off to
Library of Congress?
You can send up to 1,000 images at one time.
Right. I need to. I have not yet, and that has been one of the worst downfalls for me. There's about 10 images that have been stolen off of Model Mayhem, FetLife, mm-hmm. other websites, mm-hmm. and companies have used it for profit. And I have spoken with lawyers about going after these companies. It's such a hard battle to go in and get a takedown notice done. There's about 5 images that are all over Twitter. They're all over Pinterest, other places. And once someone goes in and grabs that image, they go in and they edit out my copyright.
Mm-hmm.
So it's gone.
Now, had you registered those images, it would have been more profitable for you to actually take action in a court of law, because once they're registered, I mean, you could still do it. You could still sue them and you would get some sort of compensation. But had you registered them, you would have gotten 10 times more.
Correct.
Yeah.
And it's not so much on, I want the money. It's the part of, hey, you used this to make money and you didn't ask me.
Right.
So it does come down to, would the people even know it was mine?
Yeah.
And that's the part that I have messed up on so big and so bad.
Mm-hmm. Years ago, and it's still around to some degree, there's a thing called the Digimarc process, to where it puts an encoded pattern into your picture that is not visible to the naked eye. But you can then take a scan of a stolen image from you and run it, just either just take a picture of a screen, any way you can get it back into the system, and it can read this noise pattern and identify it with a serial number that's registered to you, which is a very handy thing. It's a little expensive. They also have a network combing service, to where they have a crawler that goes all over the web looking at pictures. If it finds one of your registered pictures, it will notify you, and then you can start litigation on them. I'm a member of a FetLife group called the REAPS Project, R-E-A-P-S Project, with a copyright in, as the C in the project. One of the discussion threads is the $8,000 mistake that all bloggers should be aware. And this was a photographer that went after a photograph that he saw online that was being used. And it was thought to be a legitimate use, just like you had mentioned. Some people don't realize they're your pictures. A graphic designer was given the photograph by a company to include in their website, which he then just put in there. And the next thing he knows, he gets a cease and desist letter. And not only cease using it right now, but pay $8,000 now.
Right, right.
And so it's interesting how that can come at you.
I've had an acquaintance on FetLife that I asked him a long time ago, what do you do whenever all these images of yours are stolen and placed up? And he responded that, you know, a lot of people feel flattered that you want to take my work and put it up somewhere. That's nice. Mention me. Put down, hey, I found this by this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he found it, he would go on and he would put a comment. This image is my original image. Thank you for posting it up. You can find the original image here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said that seemed to work. Mm-hmm. It's a two-way battle. I mean, you could, by doing that, it's nice. Then it also puts that person who went out and sought that image and they didn't care to know who it was to a world of images that they liked before. Now they got a whole lot more that they can go and take.
Well, there's this whole social media concept and value of intellectual property in the social media realm has definitely been devalued a lot. Fet's policy with memes was one where they would freely let you put memes up from wherever you wanted to get them. You could put them up. And there seems to be an ever-declining value on intellectual property and artist rights.
Yeah, it got to be a part to where I just turned loose of it. I would start obsessing about it badly, and I just had to turn loose of it and just stop.
How did you find your images that were bootlegged?
People can go in and do a simple reverse image search. If you go into Google and type reverse image search, if you go into your app store and type in reverse image search, there's apps for that on the Android market.
Yeah, on the Play Store. Yeah.
I don't know about the thing. But there are things inside the Play Store, and it's simply as you have an image and you tell this computer program to go and find where these images are.
Mm-hmm.
And Kat went and did a search for one of mine, and it's on my profile, it's a very close-up macro picture of a young lady licking two cherries. And the cherries are so detailed, you can see the individual colors inside of the Bing cherries.
Mm.
And guys look at it and they're like, oh man, those are balls. Dude, she's licking balls. Oh, that's so good. Kat went and searched, and it was on over 3,000 websites.
Wow.
I spent 2 weeks finding that image.
And part of that search, there's companies that use that image for iPhone covers, for a lot of advertising things.
Prints, for...
Mm. Yeah.
Portfolio work themselves. There's a business.
Portfolio has, work for themselves?
Yes, yes. Portfolio work for themselves, saying that they've actually done the image. I spent, with just this one image, because he has worked with well over 5,000 women easily. You know, there's quite a few pictures on that Photoshop at home. And I mean, it's literally not only used just for portfolio work, but there's galleries where you can go and get like an 8x10 or a 10x12 print where they're saying it's
so
theirs.
They've stolen your stock photos.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's something else.
And speaking of such a large amount of pictures that you've done, I can't stress hard enough, or I can tell you about the heart attack that I had the day that my hard drive went down.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked and I realized there goes 7 years of digital Tiny K. And then now I have three backups.
Yeah, I have a backup and a backup.
Right. It's the difficult part that we're running into right now with my with the person that helps me with my computer stuff is to keep my Photoshop computer virus free. It never touches the internet. Mm-hmm. It's always offline. So I bought the programs and I put it on there. And to get a program that will back up all the images without being online is an issue right now. But we're working on getting that corrected out so it'll back up between the three locations.
Wow.
I've worked computer archiving for a number of years, and the rule is three. It's three copies in three physical locations, and that means not in your house. So you need to get something buried somewhere.
Right, right. And that, and I've still got two or three large plastic tote tubs full of film.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Oh, that film, for you listeners out there, that was things that come in canisters of 36 shots each, or sometimes even 24, and
or
you would
12.
Send it to a lab.
Yeah.
And that was really dampening to erotic photography, those film days were.
Oh, yeah. You had to be careful of where you sent it and what you sent.
Yeah.
And then you're not even talking about hoping that you had the lighting set correctly. Yeah. You were really, really focusing on the light sensor and the strobe lights and going off. And then if you start talking about the medium format cameras.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Or the large format cameras. That's $2 a click right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I shot Hasselblad for years, and you shot very conservatively.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very conservatively. And, I mean, for a long time, my shooting style, I'd tell the girl, okay, ready? One, two, three, click. Ready? One, two, three. Because each roll was $10, $15. At the point in time, the common term TFCD. Trade for CD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a photographer aspect of trading, $15 a roll, and the model's not paying much of anything?
Mm-hmm.
No. And the digital world came in, and once I finally crossed in, my photography exploded. I mean, Kat sat down one day, and she found one of my old albums. She's like, oh my gosh, you did these? Whoa.
His old work looks nothing like what he makes now. His old work isn't inferior. It's just you can definitely tell that he went from, quote-unquote, a GWC or guy with camera that was very interested and wanting to learn and reading up and doing what he needed to do to this flourishing BDSM photographer that does all kinds of everything. And just like with his rope bondage picture, you can tell that there was a progression. Any bondage he's ever done, It was a progression. He started out with nylon, and then he went to this, and then he went to that. The photos are the same way. He started out with film, and it was three or four basic, you know, cute little poses that brought it into, well, show me your pussy.
Yeah. Well, you know, back whenever I first started, the agreement I had with the C was no second set of lips.
Mm-hmm. I came in and changed all that.
Yeah. A really good friend of mine, a very close mentor, a photographer mentor of mine, said that he knew things had changed in my life the day that he looked at my FetLife profile and saw pussy.
That was the first pussy picture you ever
He's
did.
He's like, hey, something's going on with Tiny. There's a pussy there.
Do you find that because it's digital, they think that you should take their photos for free?
Well, sure, but then there's always people try and feel like they should get a lot for free or whatever, but then it comes into what are you paying for that value?
Mm-hmm.
And you can really come in and take a look at you know, with the years I've been doing this, and I'm sure, you know, everybody here, photographers, can attest that you get so much stock of one type of image style. What's different? What are they bringing to the table that's going to be different about it for you, mm-hmm. to where you want to shoot it? Unless there's something specifically I'm going for. TWCs are, you know, trades are, you know, very limited.
We don't necessarily get the people that come in or the models that come in and say, you know, hey, it's digital, so it doesn't cost much, so shoot me for free. We get the models that come in and go, I'm skinny and I'm pretty and I weigh 96 pounds and I've done fetish photography before, so pay me. Yeah. That's the big problem mm-hmm. we run into.
Right, and you run into that across on the modeling sites like Model Mayhem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you get the girls that think, if I'm going to get naked, I should get paid. Well, guess what? Every other girl's got two boobs.
Well, sites like Model Mayhem, though, have flourished with the digital realm, where so many more images are being produced today than I think have ever been produced in the past. And it's every young lady past the age of, well, I won't say, thinks that she should be a model at some point in her career.
What are you trying to say, Beast?
And they all tried, and they all want to be the next...
next top model?
Mm-hmm. Next top model.
Well, back in the 80s, when I had my first 35mm Nikon camera.
Go Nikon.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Canon user now.
So. Yay.
I came from the dark side, as my photo teacher would say. But back in the day, we used film, and I was so much younger than I am now. I had a friend. My ex-husband was in the Navy, and so my friend's husband was overseas, and she wanted to take some erotic pictures of herself. And what we ran into was, well, I didn't do blackroom work, and so we would have to send them off to the lab to
right.
get them done.
Right.
And I told her, I said, well, I'll take whatever you want me to take, but you're going to have to get them developed.
You're going to have to find a place to develop them.
So, you but she did.
You've got to face the clerk.
Yeah. And then I knew a friend of mine at one point worked in one of those little photo booths, you know, that you drove through, you dropped your film right. off, and then you right. came back a couple days later and picked up your prints. And we would go through the prints, you know, when they came back. And there was some very erotic pictures in those. So, you know, we had fun doing that. But that's...
Looking at other people's pictures?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, it has changed the way that people look at photography, digital. It has made it easier for people to take erotic pictures, because they don't have to go through that embarrassment of going to the store to pick up those prints, knowing right. that clerk has, you know, seen what you've been doing.
Right, right.
Because it's so taboo.
In general, the professional labs back in the film days were the place to go, because you wouldn't get a judgmental treatment. And also, you wouldn't have the kids going through your pictures.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. I was just a kid.
But there was always the labs advertising in the back of the magazines.
Discreet.
Discreet.
Yeah.
Never did try any of those. Now, Tony.
Yes.
I've been in your studio.
Okay.
It's a very interesting place.
It is. It is where all the magic happens.
But it is amazingly small.
Yes, it's amazing what you can learn to work with based off of your lighting and how you set up the surroundings. So what Beast is going towards is you take your average spare bedroom inside of your house, and that's where I set up my studio. I went in and first started off with all of my shooting in my studio. I have a set of Alien Bees strobe lights, and I got the small pair. In fact, Ben, I was part of the first 20 people to ever buy Alien Bees here locally in Nashville.
Let me shake your hand.
And so I first started up and using backdrops. And with the backdrops, I did not go out and pay $60 for a muslin backdrop back in the film days. I went out and I bought two king size bed sheets. Mm-hmm. And I would use one as the background and one as the floor. Mm-hmm. And then I started wanting to do the solid white paper. Paper sucks, let me tell you. If you've ever worked with paper, just putting that big roll of paper up there.
And it tearing.
Well, it yeah. But
getting dirty.
Getting dirty. But try the first time you ever go to use it and you have it held up there. And I go to pull it down and I get it to the spot where I'm done. Damn thing kept on rolling out.
Yeah. It'll either roll out or it'll curl up. It never goes where you want it.
No, I watched it and the girl that I was shooting, we watched it unravel.
The whole thing?
The whole damn thing. And we stood there laughing about it for a while, and I'm glad that she laughed. I was very embarrassed. But the paper wrinkles, it tears, it dimples, and you can't stand on it without it creating something that you're going to have to edit out later. So I chose to go in, and I put in plywood inside of the floor. So I've got my whole spare bedroom floor covered up with the solid plywood. And then I put a seamless curve on the back wall. So that way there's no 90 degree point so that you have to go in and edit it out. So I put in a small seamless curve.
That you bitch at models about never stepping on.
And I've had one model step on and put a hole in it.
What is the curve made of?
The curve is made up of kitchen floor laminate. I went in and I asked for a 3 foot wide section of the cheapest kitchen laminate that they had.
That would bend easy, yeah.
They asked me, what color do you want it? I don't care what color it is. I want the cheapest. Because all I wanted was the back. Mm-hmm. I could care less about what the front was. But I literally measured it out to the width of my wall. And I stapled it in. And then I put it down on the floor. And I had to screw it in to the hardwood on the floor. Staples didn't go into that plywood. And you got to pay for the good plywood, not just the regular plywood that you get to throw up on a house, but the stuff that is very, very smooth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the finish grade, yeah.
And so I did that, and then I put the drywall spackle in to make it smooth. So, I mean, you can walk up to it, and you can press on it, and it flexes. Mm-hmm. But it gives me that instant curve, so there is no depth. And then by painting my sidewalls white in Photoshop, I got very good, really quick, at going in and deleting and editing out the corners. Mm-hmm. So I've had many, many a model beast come in and say exactly what you said. I figured your studio would be much, much larger because it's so small, but you never realize until the finished edit image.
Tony K does the most incredible high-key work I have ever seen.
Well, thank you.
And let alone seen and produced in such a small space.
Okay, you keep saying small. How small is it?
I would say 8 to 9 foot wide and about 10 foot deep.
That is small.
It's like it's like a small spare bedroom.
When I shot high key, I would like for my models to be 8 foot from the background.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
How high is your ceiling?
It's your standard household ceilings. Now you realize I can reach up and touch the top of the ceiling very easily. Okay, because
so it's a normal 8 foot ceiling.
It's then. A normal 8 foot ceiling. Yes. Mm-hmm. And here recently with a lot of my suspensions that I was doing, if a girl was of average height or a little bit taller, it was very hard to do an inversion because their head would be very close or their hair would be dragging. Mm-hmm. So I went to a friend and he made me a suspension bar, and I now have a big, nice hole in the top of my ceiling, but it gave me an additional 8 to 12 inches of height, which makes a world of difference whenever it comes into doing the suspensions.
And the work you're turning out is just amazing. And you're working with two alien bees. And for the listeners, that's a studio unit that is very reasonably priced and very durable for the work.
Yes, the Alien Bee lights are the strobe lights, and basically you can turn them on. They have a built-in internal fan, which nowadays pretty much all of them have the built-in internal fans. But if you're wanting to go out and start and buy a strobe light, you can get one for about $300, I think. And Alien Bees really guarantees their work for their quality of stuff for a long time. I haven't had any problems with mine, and it's been well over 16 years now that I've had them.
For the listeners, that's considered a monoblock?
Yes.
That means the power supply, the light, the modeling light, everything, the triggering circuit is all in one package. And so if you have that, then on a lighting stand or shooting into an umbrella or whatever type of diffusion you want to use, it is a self-contained thing. Years ago, decades ago, everything was separate. You had a power supply that was on the floor, and you had fairly large wires that carried the high voltage and the trigger and everything up to the head. The nice thing is the heads were very small, and so you could tuck them up tight against the ceiling or something, which would be a bonus for you in a small space.
Right, right.
But they were a lot less convenient because they had these rather large wires that you couldn't hide well, and they were expensive to extend. So the monoblocks really opened up the photography for lighting.
Right, right. And definitely with the white background beast, with three lights or managing the two lights very well, you can eliminate all shadows on the backside by where you normally had a model 8 foot away from the backdrop. That was to avoid any shadows. But yet, if you come in with a good, strong light across that back, well, then you'll eliminate it, most of any shadows. When offered a larger studio to go and work, I found myself in my own little small 8x10 space. I was always shooting in. I was never really that much further out. Now, for those people coming in and looking at the profile there at Tiny K, I would have to say 90% of all studio pictures are done inside of my studio. There's a few that were done inside of a larger studio. But pretty much people come and they see what they can do, and it really opens up the options.
For the listeners, on FetLife, it's Tiny K, T-I-N-Y-K, and he's in Nashville, Tennessee, and so you can see his work there. You also have other sites?
I do have our rope bondage website. We're putting on some photography pictures a little bit, but our other site is tinyk.net for the selling of the rope bondage. I used to be on Model Mayhem, but I've really kind of moved away from that because I find myself doing a lot more just BDSM kink stuff, not so much of the headshots and other things. And it's just me. I find them boring. I can do them, but I'd rather do the other stuff.
You didn't find them boring until you met me.
Well, we're about to turn the camera on you, Kat. So tell us what it's like to be a model.
Or more likely, a fetish model.
I don't really call myself a fetish model. I'm just kind of lucky to have him. You know, those girls you were talking about that were like in their 20s
yes,
and wanted to... Yeah, no, yes. Not me. Seriously, how we met was I was engaged at the time and wanted to come in and do some pictures for my future husband. He turned out not to be my future husband.
Oh.
I paid him the first time to see me naked.
Yes.
And where do I line up for this work at?
I did something wrong somewhere. I don't know.
I came in and we met. We talked online for a long time. He made me very comfortable about it because I have never been a modest person, even when I was a Barbie doll. You know, I'm very open with my sexuality. I've been in a lifestyle long before I was ever legal and, you know, really enjoyed it. But he really made me feel comfortable that he wasn't going to sell my images or use my images for profit, or my face wasn't going to wind up somewhere overseas and then my dad or other family member was going to be like, yeah, what did you do?
Right. And pretty much I've had a lot of girls come in and be very nervous. And one of my things that I like to do whenever a girl finally decides that she's going to take her shirt off, and they'll always do that hand bra thing. They'll take their shirt off and they'll turn around and have their hands covering their nipples. And then they'll drop it down and look. And I'll be like, hey, honey, come here. Look, it's a nipple. my gosh, have you ever seen a nipple? But I've had girls become so comfortable to where they're literally walking around butt-ass naked around the whole house after. And then I'll usually stop them on the way out and say, so do you remember how nervous you were coming in?
That's the one good thing I can say about, I guess, quote-unquote, being a fetish model and working with you that has really helped your photography as far as me being there and us being a team and working together and it flourishing like it did once, you know, I brought you over to the dark side because we have cookies.
Yes.
There are, you know, you would think that if somebody wants to do these type of images, they're ready to do these type of images. They are set for it. They understand the nudity. They're not going to be modest. They're going to come in there and rock it out. No.
Wrong. Wrong. Just like all guys want to become porno guys. Yeah, you got fluffers there for a reason.
Well, you do kind of alleviate the creepy side of it when you got a couple doing the work instead of just the guy.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of the females, you know, so far have really been happy about, because me being me, I'm not modest, and my one thing I love to do to just blow the minds of a model that's really either self-conscious or worried about getting naked, as I look at her and ask her, you know, are you sure you want to do this? Yeah, I want to do this. Nervous about getting naked? Yep. Why? I don't know. So then that's my cue to just drop and get butt-ass naked and look at her and go, so, ready to do this?
So I'll say to him, so you want to be the number 5,000 pair of breasts I've seen?
So, Tani, you have a naked model and a naked studio assistant.
Yep.
So let's go ahead and introduce the one disclaimer I'll definitely put out, and I'll proudly put out. In the 20-something years I've been doing glamour work,
I'm the only model you've ever fucked.
Well, you're the only model I've ever gotten together with. She's the only model that has ever had a twinge, a nudge out of the big beast downstairs come about because, and I know that you folks will agree, you get in, get going with the studio stuff, you're doing the photo shoot. I'm thinking more on pose, lighting, move your arm here, move your hair here. I could care less about breast, butt, pussy. I'm not playing with it. I don't care. You are another model. That's good. I'm there focused on getting the images. I've never gotten excited about doing while doing a photo shoot.
Hey, I worked really hard to get you to play with me. I wanted that.
Well, I know. You managed to achieve your goal.
Show did 3 years later.
You fell for it.
I'll be a sucker.
Everything I could do to get him to play, and he wouldn't. It was so hard because I did the first photo shoot I ever did with him. I mean, I really tried. I thought he was handsome and loved that he was tall and the biceps on him and found him really attractive. And I tried everything I could do to get some kind of flirt back, some kind of, you know, hey, let's go to dinner. Nothing. I didn't get shit. And then a couple weeks later, I came back in to get my images and do some more and gave him my damn all again and finally got something.
Our headspace when we're working behind the camera is completely different. You know, we're being technical. We're thinking about numbers, focal length, f-stops, shutter speeds, light levels, all that sort of stuff. And it's a swirl of numbers in our head.
Guy stuff.
It is guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
see, I'm a photographer too, and I don't think all that stuff when I'm shooting.
Really?
Really?
What do you think?
Well, I know that the lighting's right because I'm going to set it right to begin with. And then I'm just shooting and talking to them, and I want to get that feeling. And there's not a technical thing going on in my head.
Okay. So never invite me over for a photo shoot, by the way.
And see, I'm a mathematician and a photographer. A very good technical photographer, and I'm sorry, Kat, I could not have ignored you.
See?
Well, see.
Everybody's different.
I'm the sadistic asshole.
Now.
That would walk by knowing that she's already set her lights up and she's comfortable with them. And if I see her shooting away and never looking, I'll walk by the light and I'll blow that thing way high. And I'll get it going really good. And I'll only let her go about maybe 6 or 7 shots. And I'll ask, so how's that looking? Is it looking okay?
What the fuck happened? I don't know what I'm doing wrong. wrong.
And you know, that's the part of the digital world that really progressed out for so many people. And it also hindered so many people. Mm-hmm. As a digital world, you have that instant gratification. So people don't learn what that's an f-stop is. They don't learn how fast, how your shutter speed. They don't learn about, and think about this, Beast, how many times do you think about going into your digital camera and actually changing the film speed?
Constantly.
I do a lot.
Not too many people think about it.
Yeah. You're right.
It's important. It's important to control the f-stop and the shutter speed combination.
Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, that film speed, a lot of people don't mess with it and they forget about it. Mm-hmm. But so many new people coming in, they want that instant gratification. They take the picture. They look. Does it look good? Okay. What can I adjust? I've been asked by so many people to teach them photography. And they'll show up with the digital SLR. So they have the digital camera with the lens attachable. And then they take the picture and they look at that LCD screen. And I tell them, turn that off. I want you to shoot everything through the lens. Don't go to automatic. Don't go to portrait. Go to manual.
Mm-hmm. And there's a name for it. It's called chimping.
Chimping?
Chimping. You like a chimp.
Okay. But then it's that aspect to where if you're in automatic mode and you go somewhere, and then now all of a sudden your camera's messing up and it's not working. You have to have that technical aspect to know what can you do to adjust, what can you do to fix, what can you do to get that done, because are you going to be able to recreate that image? Are you going to be able to recreate that setting?
I was that person. I really was. I'd pick up my camera and I'd take some really good pictures in automatic, you know. You know, my husband's a photographer, so I really wanted to know what I was doing and how it was affecting my images. And so I decided to go to school. Boy,
you learned a lot.
I learned a ton, and next semester I'm taking lighting one, so I'm really excited about that. But you know, there is so much that you can do with your camera that you really don't realize it until you start putting it in manual. You start finding out what f-stop and shutter speeds you use when you're going to pan or when you're going to, you know, shoot in the dark or what have you. So people don't realize how much technical aspects go along with just taking one image.
Right, right.
And then shoot with a strobe light and it's completely different again because...
Absolutely.
See, I've not done that, so...
Yeah, wow. Shooting with the strobe light, a lot of times I'll get a girl that will... You know, like a lot of my images that are sometimes up on FET, a lot of them were on, goodness, Kat set me up with a Facebook account. But I can have a young lady sitting in the studio floor with a black background sitting on a black sheet. And I can have her butt naked with a leg up and that one strobe light to the side and it hides everything. She could be sitting there, legs wide open. But by the time that image is done, it's so shadowed out, you can't see lips, breast, nothing.
The images turn out really good. Being the model that, and with the blinking lights, sucks.
Yeah, I don't know any part about that. And, you know, but for me, for Chevy Dodge, I choose and I enjoy studio work. I don't do very well doing outside nature, outside water sports, or... Outside.
Water sports, baby. I didn't know we did that.
Inside water sports is different.
I don't know. I saw the tub picture, and that was outdoors.
It was.
They were very fun.
Yes, I have done some kinky pictures out back behind my condo with a water trough. And, you know, for people that come into the studio, they'll, you know, people always come in and they go looking at everything whenever you walk in. You'd be surprised at what you'd find in my studio that I use for pictures, such as Pam cooking spray. What do you think I would use that for, Beast?
Pam, that would be a skin glistening agent, one, I would guess.
Oh, ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
Or I've got, it's up on FetLife, a girl that came in and we used cupcake sprinkles. And it's a beautiful picture, and yet it's so much sprinkles on her. No nudity is there. You know what it is. You know she's naked, and you know that's boobs, but it covers up everything.
Candy canes in there, too.
Yes, and then there's Kat's candy cane. There's two candy cane pictures. There's one where she's holding a much larger candy cane that's in between her breasts.
Yes, that's the one I'm thinking of.
And then there's a smaller one that was inside of her. Uh-huh. And the candy cane picture that Kat's talking about is one that we wanted to produce and put out as the as a kinky Christmas card. It's a candy cane that's inserted inside of her. And when that picture went up, I hit kinky and popular on FetLife within 24 hours.
We were in bed. We had took it late that night, and we were in bed trying to spoon.
Quality time.
And
you remember, take the candy cane out, right?
Yes,
right.
We did.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah, we tried. I had to, you know, there's not enough room for both, believe me.
A little peppermint there must be a little exciting.
It was. Mm-hmm. We.
Well, you've heard of figging.
Yes, absolutely.
On that subject, the one thing that I love, that image is one of my favorite images he has ever done of me as a model. And I'm very picky about my pussy. Not only mine, but other women's as well. I'm just that way. When that picture went kinky and popular very quickly.
Within 24 hours.
But one of the most frequent and worst comments we would get would be people either private messaging him or commenting about my safety as the model.
Yeah.
Because in the picture, you don't see that the candy cane itself is saran wrapped and inside of a condom before it's ever put in me. That's what Photoshop takes care of.
Right, exactly.
And so everybody would comment with these nasty, oh, that looks like yeast infection, or, you know, oh, she's had to go to the hospital. No, every precaution, and I have kidney issues. I have a cyst that's on my right kidney. I can get a kidney infection from soap. And we took every precaution we could. He always does with every model, because there's been other models now from that picture that have came in and done similar pictures.
Right, like the railroad spike.
Oh, yes. I remember that one.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's still managed the same way for the precaution, so that no model gets tetanus or scabies.
In fact, being the railroad spike, I went in and I had to wrap it with the plastic wrap.
Did you go in and wrap it, baby? Six, seven
times more, because the railroad spikes are so sharp in corners, mm-hmm. it would cut a girl.
And loaded with rust.
Very much so. And what I did do with the candy cane picture, or any negative comments I get like that, there's a wonderful little option called delete. I will go in and I will delete that comment, because I don't want to create a bad mm-hmm. rush of bad comments, and I'll send that person a private message. Mm-hmm. It got so bad to where I had to keep the private message copied so I could just copy paste and send it out.
Wow.
So many comments on the candy cane picture.
But the thing that a lot of people don't realize is, in the studio, you are creating illusions.
Yeah.
There is a lot of trickery that goes in there and making the art.
Right.
So our listeners can follow along. So this spike, boy, it is really rusty. I remember that when it first posted. So you have, there's two spikes there, and they're wrapped together in plastic?
That's correct. They are wrapped together in the saran plastic wrap that you get at Home Depot. Mm-hmm. And actually, the model couple that came in, he brought the spikes to me as a gift, as a option for photos. And I was jokingly said, hey, we should do this because, you know, it would really nail you. And
literally.
We did. And it took a while for me to wrap up. And I wrapped a lot around the metal spikes so that the sharp tip wouldn't cut the girl that it went into. Mm-hmm. And it took a good bit of showing her how gentle it was going to be. A lot of part of what you don't realize is, whenever you see the image, it's the vagina, the pussy, sitting right there. But you have to think about it from the photographer perspective, how the girl has to literally put her butt straight up into the air and be able to hold it there with her legs pulled back, wide open, and be able to hold it while we're doing the pictures. And that's one of those where you go in and you take about 50 to 100 shots mm-hmm. and pick the one that works best.
How do you prop up a woman like this?
With about 6 or 7 different pillows.
Or you just have to be really, really flexible and able to hold yourself up like me.
Yes. I mean, you can get the girl to, I mean, literally by the time that she's done and she's propped up, she's literally laying just across on the back top side of her shoulders and in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the most comfortable position.
If you're not flexible.
If you're not flexible.
It stretches my back out. I like it.
Suffering for your art.
There's also some images that I really got into that I like doing of capturing water droplets. And I've got a picture that I did with a young lady where we had some red syrup inside of a glass and she dipped her breast down in and had that dripping in. Well, to capture the water droplet, that was literally about 200 to 300 pictures. And it's literally just, okay, dip down, pull back up, and then you're firing away. So those shutter speeds of nearly 7 frames a second really come into play. And then, of course, you got to make sure that your strobe lights can stay on top of it and keep on going with it.
Yeah, they have to be set to a low enough power level to recycle that fast.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
How do you go about finding models for yourself?
You get a really big name, and then you get all these girls to talk to you because you've got to go talk to Tiny Kay.
You know, I heard your name many, many years ago.
Right.
I was at a pool party in Mount Juliet, and all I heard was, oh, Tiny Kay's taking my picture. Tiny Kay. I said, who's Tiny Kay?
Who the hell is this Tiny Kay?
So how did you get your name out there? And
literally, it was starting out. I had to get my close friends, someone who wanted some images, and then try and get them to trust me into starting to do more of the stuff that I was wanting to do. Now, that also meant me giving up and doing a lot of things that they wanted. Okay. But that's paying your dues. That's coming in and getting your name out. But then once you get going, you know, you'll find models very frequently. But you really want to get to the part to where you want to make them comfortable. Now, some photographers, a good mentor of mine, he absolutely will not allow any escorts inside the studio with a model. Because a lot of times you will find some models, they will come in and they will focus more upon the person that came with them looking for approval. Is this okay? Is this good? Are you going to be upset if I do this? Are you going to be upset if I do that?
That's where I come in.
If that does get to a bothersome point, I will ask the person to step out. But it doesn't bother me if they bring someone with them because I'll put them to work. I'll make them get in there and help me out with different stuff, and that's fine. But sometimes the girls show up with people for their comfort level, and that's fine. It doesn't bother me. But once you get out there and you get going, well, then you have to build up on your name. So literally it comes into what do you want to do for yourself? And that namesake starts off and it continues. It's not just a one-time thing. So that took 6-7 years just for me to get going up to the point where I am now, where I continue going. And I'm humbled, very, very humbled at times whenever people come up and say, hey, you're Tiny Kay. Oh my gosh, I love your pictures. I've been perving them for years.
Mm-hmm. Groupies.
And I'm very humbled at that. I don't want to feel like have people think I'm just this big superstar or whatever. Because I'm not. I'm very humbled, and I just enjoy creating the art and creating the images to come in and do.
Well, you make women look very beautiful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And it really comes into positions. Here recently, I've had someone come in, and they came in with a friend, and we were doing pictures with her friend. At that point, I kept watching and seeing her friend, and she was so much wanting it done. And she's like, but I'm nothing. No. Mm-mm. So I was like, well, I need to test this. Can you help me while she's changing? And I took about 6 or 7 shots on purpose just for her. And then later, whenever I edited the images, I sent them to her. And I could just imagine the tears as she wrote that out to me, that response back. And she was very happy with the images. But the other part that you really have to work up on is your professionalism and your privacy.
Mm-hmm.
One of the very first things that Kat knew coming in with me as a relationship is there will be a time when she can never look at the Photoshop computer. She can never ask, who am I shooting? She has to accept that to know that those clients pay and come to me for that privacy, knowing that no one else will ever see those images. They will never know it. because you know who I shot the other day that was really famous?
You're not going to tell me.
Nope.
You know, that's actually really funny because that's happened here recently, because that was what you told me when we first got together. And I took it upon myself that, you know, I really don't care. Because normally when I'm at the house, I don't care what's on the Photoshop computer. I don't care what he did in the studio. I want me and him. And I had a model recently that he did a photo shoot with actually come to me and ask me, hey, have you seen my photos? What do they look like? Are they pretty? Did I do good? You know, did he get good shots? I don't know. Well, why don't you know? I wasn't there. Well, what do you mean? Don't you know? If I'm not there, I don't see what images he catches. I don't get to see what is created, and I don't go looking. My part of it is not the photography itself or the editing of the images or anything. My part of it is the advertisement and helping a model be comfortable. I don't have anything to do. And the look in her face was just utter shock. And even when I tell other people that, they're still really shocked to find out that there is that hardcore discretion even between us in our own household. You know, I don't look at the Photoshop computer. I don't help him with editing images. I'm not there when he's editing images. You know, when he goes and he says, hey, baby, I've got a photo shoot to work on, he goes upstairs and he works on it.
A lot of times, me personally, for Chevy Dodge again, it'll be nearly a week and a half before I ever touch the images again.
No.
After
no.
I take
it's
them.
A month before you ever get your pictures. Let's
no,
put it that way.
It's not that long. That was just you, because I wanted to make sure you kept coming around.
And it worked.
Well, and the thing is, you have to walk away from a session to get your head right before you can sit down and properly edit something.
Right.
Even doing the Kinky Cast, I have to walk away from what we're doing tonight for a few days to clear my head so I can sit down and edit this.
Right.
Same sort of process.
And there was even a girl that came in and did some pictures, one of our friends, and out of the blue, she pulls out this glass dildo for her pictures. And Kat and I
blurted the
pose out at the same time. And there's two of her images up on my profile where she's squatting down onto this glass dildo with hearts. And I took one and I left it in color. And then I did another one as a silhouette. And one of them where it's the from the backside, the girl's facing away from me. Mm-hmm. And as she's sitting down and squatting in the natural image, you've got some of those parts that my whole philosophy is, yes, it's graphic. Yes, it's very much there. You know what it is, but it's done in an artistic fashion. It's not going to be vulgar, but that's all based upon perception and what some people feel is vulgar. With this one image, I chose to go in and darken it up to where you could not see beyond the exterior fold of her buttocks. So you weren't seeing her anus. You weren't seeing the hair. You weren't seeing all that stuff. You were focusing on the glass dildo and what was her. There's some girls, I'll go in and edit out some things. I'll have them stretch and move away to get that pose just right. You get girls that want to do the images. They want to do the stuff and they think that they're one way, but they're actually a different look. And it's all with the posing, all with the way that you have them sit and look at you, to where you can get rid of the double chin. You can go in and, you know, smooth things out. You can, Photoshop is a great tool. I mean, I can go in and I can take a girl who is a habitual cutter for 8+ years and give her smooth skin. But yet I don't take and edit it beyond a point to where someone doesn't know who it is.
I haven't learn Photoshop yet. I do Lightroom only right now.
Right.
Very minimal adjustments, but I used the glass dildo in one of my shots recently, but they do make interesting props for sure. Do you have a charge schedule? Do you have it posted anywhere?
I don't have a charge schedule posted up anywhere, simply because I like to, based upon any sitting fees and charges based off of what the shoot entails. Mm-hmm. And is it something that I might use for myself as portfolio? Because to me, if I'm going to be using it for my portfolio use as well, I'm not going to charge you as much. If it's something I don't really have that much of an interest, well, then I'll bid it out and charge it out based off of what the project is. But that's per person. Mm-hmm. And I tell each person that comes into the studio, this is just for you, not for everybody else.
Right.
So there isn't a set standard rate.
Oh, okay. All right.
In closing, if you're walking down the street and you see a beautiful woman and you want to shoot her, what do you say? What's your opening line?
Cat, go get her.
Hey, nice boobs.
And when she gets done slapping the hell out of you, then?
Then I say, hey, I get paid to do this. No, if it's something, I see her and I'll start talking to a person and kind of, you know, gauge upon their reaction. But sometimes it's not that easy. It's kind of like going into Hooters and asking the waitress for her phone number. She gets that all the day long. Mm-hmm. She may or may not want that. But in a more real life aspect for me, if I see a profile and I see someone on their profile on FetLife and I see something about it that I like, I'm going to come in and I'm going to message them that, you know, I have these images in mind, and with your body frame structure or whatnot, I would like to see about doing this with you. More very, very specific, not just, hi, you look pretty. Can I get you naked and get you in the studio? They know ahead of time what it is I'm wanting to try and do, and there's an agenda.
Yeah, you don't stick your dick in the company pond.
No.
And you don't have to liquor them up either.
Nope. That is a big, strong rule for me, is no liquor, no drugs coming in. I had one shoot where there was a radio announcer person, very, very popular guy, big, tall, bald-headed guy. He had a magazine thing called Stacked and Packed, or a calendar, something. I can't remember his name. But a girl showed up with a little small bag, and it contained 3 swimsuits. And it was so small, and I was like, what's in the bag? And then she had an AK-47.
Wow.
Well, first thing I grabbed was the AK-47, because I wanted to see, is it loaded? So mm-hmm. I check it, and I chamber it out, and it's empty. So she says, do you mind if I have a drink? I'm nervous. Okay, sure, fine. Well, her friend shows up with his $40,000 motorcycle as a prop. And she's standing there, and she's starting to get wobbly, and all of a sudden I hear click, and she pulled the trigger. And I think, boy, I sure as hell am glad I checked that AK-47 to make sure it wasn't loaded. And then about 6 or 7 frames later, I had my assistant standing there next to me, and she goes to move, and she stumbles, and I pass my camera over to him really quickly, and I run up, and I grab the bike just as it's about to fall over. Because she was liquored up, and she didn't tell us then, but she had already taken a couple Valium to relax, and she was still nervous and got liquored up. And it was during that same photo shoot that I had her on the bike, sitting there taking pictures, and I was so focused on her face and her facial expressions and everything. And it was film days. And I went and got the pictures back, and then all of a sudden the C pointed out, hey, one of her labia is hanging right out of her bikini bottom. You asshole. You took that picture on purpose. And I honestly did not even see it. I was looking at her face the whole time.
Wow.
And sure enough, labia just hanging right out of the bikini bottom. She was just so liquored up bad. And whenever I showed the girl the pictures later, she sat there blushing because she didn't realize how brazen she got. And that was the only time I've ever allowed liquor. So from then on, it became a thing of no. Because if you got to get liquored up for me, you're not going to give me the good images that I need, a good crisp look in the eye. It's going to be no. It doesn't create that image I need.
Great stories, and thank you so much for sharing tonight.
Oh, thank
you. Tiny Kay and Kat, really do appreciate you joining us on the Kinky Cast tonight.
Thank you so much for having us here.
You have been listening to episode 22A of the Kinky Cast. Today we heard photographer Tiny K and his wife and model, Kat. We want to hear from you with your comments or questions. So email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Lee, I'm Max. Now part two of our Shutterbug double feature.